Good evening. I'm Leland Vittert. The head of New York's Black Lives Matter is here to defend why New York's soft on crime policies should continue. Plus, propping up these genocide games staged by the Chinese Communist Party. We'll show you the ad banned by NBC. The congressman who wrote it joins us to explain why he thinks the 2022 Olympics are a sham. But first, state governors start to admit masks forever is bad science, but perhaps more importantly to them, bad politics. George Will is here to help us understand the sudden desire by some to get back to normal. This, as Chicago's Democratic mayor makes a stunning admission.
In Chicago, there was a correlation that we believe between remote learning and the rise in carjacking. For many of these kids, who some of whom had no prior involvement in the criminal justice system, this was pure boredom.
And a lot of the innocent people died because of kids' boredom. The teachers' union is furious with her for finally admitting the obvious. The cost of remote learning and masking are almost incalculable and won't be fully known for years. It's why the blue wall of mask mandates is crumbling, in fact, falling apart. Some governors are just giving up, like California Gavin's Newsom. Lawsuits are piling up for those that haven't, and the science is shaky. Here's New Jersey's Democratic governor announcing an end of masks by next month.
We're not declaring victory, but we are stating affirmatively that we can responsibly live with this thing, and that's the reason we're doing it.
Not everybody is happy with this concept. The mask enthusiasts remain, especially among the most vocal Democrats, but the optics are becoming increasingly problematic for a number of them, like Stacey Abrams of Georgia. The one-time candidate for governor and darling of the progressive and voting rights movement tweeted this picture of herself, you can see there, sitting maskless with dozens of masked children. She then deleted the tweet, then accused anybody who dare mention the hypocrisy, effectively racist. But others are learning masks for thee and not for me is just bad politics. Gavin Newsom, governor of California, for example, caught maskless and partying during last week's NFL game. Today, just a couple of hours ago, he decided that masks are off in all of California starting next week. Ask yourself, is that a coincidence? In Illinois, parents won a lawsuit against the governor's mask mandate. It appears the Virginia governor's order against mask mandates in schools will stand. Connecticut ends their mandates on February 28th. Here is the former FDA commissioner.
A lot of kids haven't really known a normal school day for 2 years now, so we need to try to lean forward aggressively to try to restore that and reclaim it when we can.
Lean forward aggressively. Amid all the data, all the lawsuits, all the anger, the White House is doubling down on masks.
Well, the guidance is very clear, which is that we recommend masking in schools. That is the recommendation from the CDC. It is also true that at some point when the science and the data warrants, of course, our hope is that that's no longer the recommendation.
Joining us now, George Will, Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, News Nation senior contributor. George, good to see you. Does the White House know something that Gavin Newsom and Phil Murphy in New Jersey and the governor of Connecticut and the mayor of Chicago do not?
No, Mr. Biden said a few days ago, gosh, I'm going to get out more into the country. I think he'd better hurry and do that. Leland, in politics, there's a physics at work. For every reaction, there is eventually an equal and opposite reaction. And the American people are tired of being bossed around. And when they object to the regimentation that masking indicates, and it's a regimentation that really expresses a deep value to a portion of Americans. They like being regimented. They like being bossed around. And furthermore, they like the virtue signaling of masks. Masks, they think, signal that I take science seriously. But at this point, you know, now into the third year of the pandemic, the science does not say anything unambiguously about the good done by masks, and we know the harm done. We know that when we put five-year-olds in school in masks, A, we're teaching them that the world is much more dangerous than it actually is, and we're teaching them to think about other human beings as vectors of disease, like biting insects, which is just not the way You want a child to look at the people around them. Furthermore, we know as human beings that so much of our personality, so much of our communication is not verbal, it's by facial expression. And we're hiding this in the most formative years of children's lives. It's got to stop, and it's going to stop.
Clearly, and what's interesting is that it's stopping, it appears, not because of the science, but the public pressure that's coming in the form of lawsuits and parents and on and on. You said that it was a virtue signaling of I believe in science. For a while, was there this subtlety of I believe in science and the orange man is bad, therefore I wear a mask, and now being against the orange man just doesn't have the same virtue that it used to?
I don't know whether out in Chicago that you see these lawn signs that people have and they say this household believes in Dr. Fauci and science. Exactly. And the American people say, well, that's fine, but where's the evidence? And they've been waiting for it. And they do see that you used the phrase a moment ago in introducing this segment, mask enthusiasts. There is positive enthusiasm on the part of people to wear something that says we are marching in order. You know, there's always in this, in our politics, the desire to turn things into war, war on cancer, war on poverty, war on drugs. It always means the same thing, regimentation by orders issued from above. I'm telling you, there is a substantial portion of the American people for whom that's the ideal of government. And it doesn't matter whether it's masks or anything else.
Well, one of those people for whom that was the idea was caught on camera in Virginia, not far from you, speaking to the governor of her state. Take a listen.
Governor, where's your mask?
We're all making choices today.
Yeah, look around you, Governor. You're in Alexandria. Yeah. Read the room, buddy.
I laugh because you don't know what else to do, but at some level you feel as though as the mandates drop because of the public pressure against them, the mask enthusiasts remain, and these kinds of confrontations will only increase.
Let's have a live and let live attitude about this. People want to wear masks, let them. Dr. Fauci said not long ago, he was asked, should we perhaps forever wear masks on airplanes? And he said, well, you know, not a bad idea. The better part of value and abundance of caution and all those other weaselly phrases. No, people aren't going to do that. If Dr. Fauci and the others want to wear masks, let them. It's a free country. Yeah. It's free for those also who don't want to wear them.
Let's talk about the politics of this, because I was only in Washington for 6 years, not anywhere close to as long as you are, but it turn me a little bit cynical. Look at Ted Lieu's tweet. With rapid decline of Omicron, pandemic restrictions will be lifted sooner rather than later. And considering what to do, health officials must factor in natural immunity, not just vaccination rates. The CDC chart recognizes natural immunity, and so should health officials. That was heresy just 3 months ago. The science hasn't changed. What in the political world has?
Well, information is trickling out. The science hasn't changed about that. Not that long ago, it was not just heresy. It was considered semi-hate speech to say that, you know, perhaps this came from a leak in a lab in China. That is now a mainstream hypothesis deserving of explanation. Usually when you have an argument in life, you start with broad possibilities and you narrow it. We started with narrow acceptability of what was debatable, and we've now widened it, and that's a sign of health.
Well, and a sign now that we may see everybody's faces going forward. Mr. Will, always good to see you, sir. It's Monday. We've enjoyed the conversation. We'll see you next week.
Enjoyed it. See you then.
All right. Manhattan prosecutor Alvin Bragg is backtracking now on some of his controversial soft-on-crime policies. He's backtracking after only a month. Crime is getting worse in New York, up 60% in the past week. Violent crime across the Big Apple was up last year as well. Murders by 4%, assaults by 10%, shootings were up by 100%. Earlier this year, the DA sent a memo just after he was inaugurated, saying he would only incarcerate killers and rapists. His approach largely meets the demands from social justice activists who pushed reform in the wake of George Floyd's death. Some of the changes in New York include the removal of stop and frisk. Now, Democrats are distancing themselves from these reforms after facing backlash from the public. We bring in co-founder of Black Lives Matter Greater New York, Hawk Newsom. Hawk, good to see you. Thank you for being here. Eric Adams, who we'll get to in a minute, he ran on a tough-on-crime policy and message. But Alvin Bragg, the DA, did not. Is him going back on these sentencing guidelines and prosecutorial guidelines betraying groups like yours?
No, I think Alvin Bragg has to play a bit of politics. I think for the most part, his policies are intact. He has the church behind him. And let's think about who Alvin Bragg was. Alvin Bragg was one of the special prosecutors assigned to prosecute police misconduct cases. This man is no idiot, but he sees no purpose in jailing people when they could be posed with other alternatives that might actually help them and make them more productive members of society.
We've been trying this for a while, though, in New York. Obviously, before Eric Adams, you had Bill de Blasio and his policies, which were certainly, in the past couple of years, very reform-minded. How long do we let this experiment go on before the rise in crime is simply unacceptable?
Well, I thank you for this opportunity to teach. Bill de Blasio wasn't necessarily a friend or an advocate for the Black Lives Matter movement. He tried it. He ran on a platform that said he was going to do all of these great things as far as Black Lives Matter went. But his policies were extremely different. While he was saying that police would not kettle protesters, police were outside kettling protesters at that very moment. While he was saying that he would not prosecute people for crimes of poverty, like fare evasion and, you know, hopping a train and things like that, he was still prosecuting those people. Bill de Blasio was a fraud and a buffoon.
Hold on. That's not really his decision who to prosecute and who not to. That's up to the police and to the DA, right?
But you just said that Bill de Blasio was responsible for these soft-on-crime politics.
He was clearly, and you said this, his talking points were clearly more progressive than Rudy Giuliani or Michael Bloomberg, correct?
I love that you said talking points, because that's exactly what they were. They were talking points. He didn't do anything other than that which we had to twist his arm to do. Let's face it, this man kept a cop to kill Eric Garner on payroll for 6 years. We had to fight to get a trial to get this man fired.
As I see it right now, you're saying de Blasio didn't do anything that you all wanted except when you twisted his arm. But now you've got Alvin Bragg, who is fully implementing the Black Lives Matter idea on sentencing and on prosecutions, and therefore the experiment begins now.
You want to point the finger at Alvin Bragg, and the country loves to do that, but under
I'm not
Eric
pointing the
Adams,
finger. I'm asking if he's doing what you want him to do.
Okay, let's not get into the semantics. Just let me make my point. Other than Alvin Bragg, you have Eric Adams, who took office, who's pro-police, pro-law and order, and 7 police officers have been shot since he took office. Okay, this is a man who has no responsibility for his actions. He's a lot of talk, and we need somebody who doesn't talk the talk, but walk the walk.
Right, and walking
He's putting people in danger.
Walking the walk might be locking up the people who ended up shooting these other officers. There's a lot of these people who were out who would not be out but for the Alvin Bragg style policies. Are you really blaming Eric Adams for the shooting? Here's
what you're talking about. There is no data that says the majority of these people who are committing these crimes were released on bail. Now people are saying crime is up. Are guilty verdicts up? What are the stats on prosecution of these cases? You have Eric Adams who is out here talking about, just let me make this one point. They criticized me for my argument and then that feud I had with Eric Adams. But in actuality, he brought Joe Biden into New York to talk about a holistic approach to crime, which meant they are taking on the approach that we recommended. Okay, which means sending former gang members, former felons into these communities to fight the crime themselves. Statistics have shown studies from research from Princeton University and a number of other scholars have shown that for each nonprofit community cure violence you invest in, the murder rate decreases by 1%.
Right, and I can show you the University of Utah study that shows that when you let people out on recognizance bails and when you allow felons out on bail again, 50% of them reoffend. So we can go back and forth on studies.
Recognizance bail has always been a policy in New York.
Right,
Giuliani, through Bloomberg, that's always been a policy.
Hold on,
I need you to get your facts together.
My facts are together, and it doesn't work. People who commit crimes are more
so
likely to commit
Giuliani
more crimes.
So you're saying Giuliani had policing
They're
wrong
more
here?
To commit
he had
more
the bail
crimes.
Policy wrong
this,
here?
This is the question I want to ask you. You said that President Biden came for this holistic approach on crime. So what I feel I'm hearing from you is that you feel as though Alvin Bragg and Eric Adams are, in one way or another, sort of saying one thing and playing politics and telling people what they want to hear, but at the same time, doing what you all want. I'm trying to understand.
I think that Alvin Bragg is doing what he has to do.
He doesn't really believe in this stuff.
No, I think he absolutely does. I didn't endorse his campaign after a phone call with him because he worked for the AG's office and he didn't successfully prosecute cops. I didn't believe in him. I was truly surprised when he came out with this radical agenda. Being someone who went to law school and can appreciate good negotiation tactics, maybe he threw that large list out there so people could bite and he can settle on what he really wanted. But I am not him. I can't guess on that. Now, if you're talking about Eric Adams has talked about being tough on crime, but he never really gave us a plan.
He said the plainclothes unit,
which he backtracked on.
Yeah.
He said that they would be plainclothes. Now he's saying that these officers would be easily identifiable. This man is a flip-flopper. This is the same man who gave me a citation, gave me an award. This is the same man who gave me kudos during the height of the Black Lives Matter movement. You got to get up to speed, man. I don't believe in these politicians, and your viewers shouldn't either, because they're full of it. We need to believe in the American people, and that means that if you want to fix crime, then you should fix poverty and invest in the people.
Not believing in the politicians may be a good place where we can all start. Hawk, it was good to see you. We appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, good to see you. Come back.
All right.
Coming up, 6 days away from the Super Bowl and what might be the best day for Cincinnati in decades. Show you what the Bengals are doing. Plus, Canadian police struggle to contain an anti-vaccine mandate protest. Now we're learning a U.S. convoy could soon be forming. Welcome back. Did you watch the Olympic opening ceremonies? No, I didn't either. They had record low ratings. Record low. Have you watched any of the Olympics so far? Nope. Well, me neither. Ask yourself this. Has anyone talked to you about an American Olympian and told you their story, why they were pulling for them? Can you name a single American athlete competing? I can't either. And that's the point. And the news about the Olympics is only going to get worse. China's zero COVID policies mixed with crazed nationalism, mixed with insane testing protocols, which we have video of, is sending dozens of athletes to quarantine hotels. We put hotels in air quotes, because it's two lives for the price of one, neither a comfortable place to stay. There are no nutritious meals, and they are not that protective from COVID. Listen to one of the athletes who's there.
I'm supposed to stay here for another 7 days with two PCRs a day and no contact with anybody else.
Seems like a lovely place. There are serious questions if China is using allegedly positive COVID tests to keep the best athletes from competing, thus helping the Chinese athletes. We're going to get to that in a minute. But ask yourself this. Have you seen a bunch of American companies doing ads highlighting their Olympic ties and sponsorship? It's the kind of thing that happens around the Olympics. You haven't seen it. There's a reason for that. To be clear, China has millions of ethnic, racial, and religious minorities in concentration and forced labor camps. Here's video of some of them. The Uyghurs, with their heads shaved, shackled, and lined up for train rides to the camps, is on the left-hand side of your screen. That is modern-day China right now. China is perpetuating the greatest genocide since World War II. That is not up for discussion. Nazi Germany, pictures from the Third Reich's Final Solution and extermination of the Jews, that picture is on the right. It is very difficult to tell the difference. The 2022 Beijing Olympics may very well be remembered, much like the 1936 Berlin Olympics. The corporate Olympic sponsors that spent millions on the games want nothing to do with the pictures we just showed you. For as much as corporate America loves cheap China labor and access to their markets, the world's biggest companies are starting to wonder, how much do we want to be associated with what's being called the genocide games? A PR win for communist Beijing on par with Nazi Germany's 1936 Berlin games. But the companies whose logos you just saw there are paralyzed, because if they dare say anything negative about China's human rights abuses, China Inc. will hit back hard. They are so paralyzed that when we called for comment on what you were about to see, the corporate PR types refused to even acknowledge our requests. We rarely play a political ad in its entirety. In fact, we never do. But this isn't a political ad. It is a moral statement, which NBC refused to air when Congressman Michael Waltz and his team purchased time during the Olympic opening ceremonies.
The world's greatest athletic showcase. But just outside the show, rape, genocide, slave labor. American companies are drunk on Chinese dollars, entangled with communist dictators committing atrocities and propping up these genocide games staged by the Chinese Communist Party. And what can we do?
Stand for freedom, defund the dictators. When you see Made in China,
put it down.
Servant Leadership Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Powerful. NBC contends it did not reject the ad, but asked for the ad to be changed to adhere to its advertising guidelines. Congressman Michael Waltz joins us now from D.C. All right, Congressman, powerful ad. Kudos to you for putting it together and for being willing to speak the truth. Do you really expect NBC, though, to air it?
Yeah, actually, we did, Leland. I don't accept that from NBC. We had a legal team and an advertising team make sure the ad adhered to all of their standards. And what NBC came back with was that we'll air it as long as you take all the company logos out and materially change the ad, which is basically a non-rejection rejection, and completely altered the point of it. And by the way, I did this with Inez Cantor Freedom, the NBA basketball star who's been so forceful and brave in his calling out of the NBA, of his fellow players like LeBron James and Nike, who literally have their products and have deals with companies that are using slave labor and are supporting and abetting an ongoing genocide. So we need the American people to understand what's going on. And it, you know, it's disappointing, but not that surprising that NBC is afraid. They're afraid of the Chinese blowback. They're afraid of their sponsors. They're only worried about their bottom line. And all of those companies preach social justice when it comes to causes here at home, and then hypocritically turn a blind eye when multiple administrations have in detail laid out a mass genocide that's happening as we speak.
It also seems as though Congress always gets right up to the line of taking action on this. There's a number of bills that have come up, I know some that you support, that talk about banning goods from the province where the Uyghurs are to try and prevent slave labor and the like. And every congressman or senator we have on loves to talk about how in favor of the bill they are, but for some reason it never seems to get to the floor and then never gets to the White House. Why is that?
Well, all of those companies, Intel, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, Airbnb, I mean, some of the largest and most powerful in the country have actively lobbied against it. It's all in their disclosures for years. Coca-Cola gets its sugar from Western China. Nike gets its cotton, literally picked from cotton fields by people at the other end of a barrel. But just this year, we actually did get it done, Leland. The president signed it into law. Now it has to be implemented. And for example, Intel, which makes its computer chips in Western China, sent a notice out to its suppliers in China and said, we can't abide by this kind of slave labor anymore. Huge blowback from the Chinese Communist Party. Intel then apologized and backtracked. NBA has done the same thing with one coach who said, I stand for freedom in Hong Kong. China threatened to cut them off from their market. NBA then threatened to fire the coach until he took the tweet down. This is an example of what's to come. If Xi, President Xi of China, realizes his vision of replacing the American dream with the China dream. So this isn't just a human rights issue or a jobs issue. It's a national security issue. And our message in that ad was, when you see Made in China, put it down. A lot of people are talking about defunding things. Let's defund dictatorships. And I don't want our future soldiers and sailors facing a Chinese military that was funded on American dollars.
You think about, though, what you just said about Intel, that this law was passed that conceivably was supposed to have some teeth and change things. Intel sent a letter, the Chinese got upset, Intel backtracks and apologizes. Doesn't that just prove the law doesn't have any teeth to it?
Well, that's where the administration, I mean, Congress passes the law, and the executive branch, the administration, enforces them. And that's where we need President Biden's Treasury Department, his Commerce Department, his Justice Department to actually enforce the law that the president signed onto the books. But, you know, I'm not going to put it down. We're not going to give up. And I have additional measures that will be in this defense bill that says no defense contracts from the U.S. military when your company is directly and indirectly aiding and abetting the Chinese military, not to mention these Olympic Games, which is a massive propaganda coup for the Chinese Communist Party. And NBC alone is a $7.5 billion contract with the IOC. And look, Leon, everybody says we should support our athletes. I agree. But at the end of the day, you know, as Inez Kanter said, no amount of gold medals are worth your values. And it's the IOC who put our athletes in these position of choosing between being able to compete or turning a blind eye to these kinds of atrocities.
There seems to be beginnings of the rumblings in coming from China about whether the games are really that fair, because perhaps unsurprisingly, there's a number of athletes who are ending up with positive COVID tests and now can't compete. Suddenly, the Chinese athletes are able to compete, and they've done continue to do fairly well. Is it possible to have fair Olympic Games in China?
Under this communist regime, this dictatorship, I don't think so, nor are our athletes safe. And again, you have some pundits and the IOC saying we shouldn't mix politics with sports. Well, you know, the IOC took a principled stand when it came to apartheid. They banned any Olympics in South Africa. Heck, they went a step further and banned any South African athlete for 30 years for competing in the games. So, you know, why did they take a principled stand then but not now? And the only difference is the amount of money involved. Whether it is Hollywood,
I want to just get this. No, you make a great point about the money. Real quick, though, with the amount of money that China has, is this sort of closing the barn doors after the horses have already gotten out? How is it possible to do anything to actually get the Chinese back in line when they have such leverage over the world's biggest corporations, much less America's?
Well, number one, you're right. I don't trust these corporate CEOs. They're only worried about their next bonus and next quarterly earnings. That's why the message in our ad is to the American people, when you see made in China, put it down. It needs to be made in America. And if it can't be made in America, at least in an allied country like India or democracy, you know, like Malaysia or Australia, that's not talking about replacing the United States as a global leader. But I think COVID, Leland, was a real wake-up call in our supply chains. The Chinese are actively talking about choking off our pharmaceuticals, our computer chips, our rare earth minerals. And I think the American people are seeing that having access to those things, again, isn't just a jobs or economic issue. It's a true national security and health of our country issue. And we can't have it all in the hands of a dictatorship that doesn't mean us well.
You know, you have to really wonder if China is willing to play economic warfare, which clearly they are, and they're talking about when we're willing to play economic warfare back, which is something I know you're advocating here with the put it down if it's made in China. Congressman, good to see you as always. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Lewin.
All the best. Coming up, new calls to cancel one of the world's biggest podcasters. We'll take you behind the hit job out on Joe Rogan. Okay, reasonable people can agree. It does look bad. A growing number of musicians have taken their music off Spotify to protest Rogan's discussions on COVID and vaccines. Bring in Trish Regan, who hosts her own show on Spotify. Trish, good to see you. Is the move to cancel Joe Rogan really about the fact that he used the N-word in podcast 12 years ago that people have been able to watch and listen to for years, or is there a different motivation?
I think there's just an effort to cancel a guy who's extremely successful and thinks outside the box. And that's really scary, Leland, for some reason, to a lot of people right now. It's like you got to fit in line with the woke agenda, which, by the way, he does not. But he's an interesting guy, right? Because it's not like he's clear cut, you know, one way or the other in terms of politics. But the fact that he doesn't buy in to what they're selling, I think, is really the root of this problem. I mean, this video just surfaced, but let's not lose sight of the fact that this has been going on now for some time, right? And Neil Young was doing this before this video even came about.
Right, like and the video—
They get a sense of power.
Yeah, well, the clips of Rogan saying this have existed for years. They've been posted on podcast links and on YouTube and everything else, and people could have gotten them and listened to them and been offended. Everybody only managed to get offended after his comments on COVID and the vaccine. The Spotify CEO, I do not believe the silencing Joe is the answer. I do not believe that silencing Joe is the answer. Canceling voices is a slippery slope. It's critical thinking and open debate that powers real and necessary progress. You're slightly conflicted, but I'm still going to put you on the spot here. Is this Spotify truly taking a stand on principle, or is it impossible to cancel a $100 million man?
That's what I said from the beginning. They've got such a heavy investment in this guy that it's kind of hard to walk away from. Yet simultaneously, if you start to see this cancel culture kick in a massive way and you've got your artists running for the doors, well, then what do you do as a CEO? So what is the CEO, Dan Elkin, trying to do? He's trying to have it both ways, right? He wants to have his cake and eat it too. He's like, okay, saying to the staff over there, no, we understand. We don't approve of his behavior. We don't approve of some of these podcasts, but oh, oops, we did put $100 million into the guy. So then simultaneously saying it's important for freedom of speech. Look, where I come out on this. I don't believe in any kind of cancel culture. I think it is so horrifically wrong for our society. And the danger now, Leland, is, it's like sharks in the water. If they smell blood, right. If they get the sense that they can cancel him like they've canceled so many others, and look, I put myself in that camp because they didn't like.
Yeah, no, what you make a great
about the politicization of coronavirus. I mean, the media goes crazy.
No, you make a great point, and that is that there's a group of people, there's a mob on Twitter who sort of lives for scalps, and the only way they get power is when they're taking a scalp. The other sort of scalp that is now out there is the truckers in Canada. You've got a couple of thousand of them in Ottawa, the Freedom Convoy. Now, Ottawa has declared a state of emergency, and now they're trying to declare it an unlawful protest. And they're taking away their fuel, their propane. You've got, on the 11th day, 5,000 protesters, 1,000 trucks. It's now illegal to honk your horn in Ottawa. And what is stunning to me, and you and I covered some of the same things, is that during the Black Lives Matter protests, people were looting and destroying Portland, Seattle, Minneapolis, Chicago, Washington, D.C., shutting down the entire city. And this same mob was saying, hey, people have to be given space to have their voices heard. Yet you've got a couple of truckers hanging out, singing the Canadian national anthem and playing hockey, and they are a threat to law and order.
I mean, it shows you what a scary time I think that we live in, Leland. You were just talking about China, of course, and the Olympics and the advertisers that are kind of going along to get along there. This is the problem right now. Nobody's willing to speak up and call any of this out. I mean, it's important that we recognize that it's not fair, it's not right, and people have always had and should continue to have the right to peaceful protest, which is what you're seeing with the truckers. And by the way, I get it. I hear them, right? It's not fair because how can you make a living if they're going to constantly quarantine you every time you cross the border there and that's your job. So they have a right to speak up. And it's important. It's actually central, certainly to our country, but Canada shares a lot of the same values. So it's important that they go out there and they make their voices heard in a peaceful way. And that's what they're doing. And yet you've got the likes of GoFundMe trying to say, no, we're going to take all that money and redistribute it as we see fit. They've since changed their tune.
Yeah, no, it's hard. This actually was a peaceful protest and continues to be. Hey, Trish, we got to run. Thank you as always. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Leland.
Yeah, thank you. Welcome back. We're just 6 days away from the Cincinnati Bengals beating the Los Angeles Rams in the Super Bowl. It's a classic David and Goliath story. Small market Cincinnati going up against the behemoth of Los Angeles. To make matters worse for the Bengals, the Rams happen to have the home field advantage. Then again, it's LA, so anything is possible. And it's not like the Bengals are very used to being in big games. They've never won a Super Bowl. Their last appearance was all the way back in 1988. Most of the players on the Bengals weren't actually born the last time the Bengals were in the Super Bowl. But the team's success is bringing that small Midwestern city back. The community's rallied around the winning streak. The Bengals have even gone as far as gifting championship game balls to local bars. One of those bar owners, managing brewer and owner of Streetside Brewery, Garrett Hickey, is with us. All right, Garrett, the ball I know is under lock and key, but how surprised were you when you guys got one?
We were very surprised. So a couple bars in our neighborhood had gotten balls, and we didn't expect to get one. But I believe he's the president of player operations, Duke Tobin, stopped by at 1 a.m. after the game on Sunday and tried to drop one off. We weren't open, but his wife was nice enough to bring it back on Monday. Yeah,
and what'd you
she was
guys
nice enough
do
to bring it back on Monday
to deserve a ball.
So it's really the Bengals' way of showing, I guess, appreciation for bars and neighborhood spots all around Cincinnati. And I think that was just we identify very much as a neighborhood spot. I think that's why we end up getting one.
And what has the Bengals done for Cincinnati? You know, Cincinnati's a town that's been down on its luck. You think about a little bit like St. Louis, a little bit like Columbus, that's really had a tough go the past 20 or so years. What has this Bengals road to the Super Bowl meant for you guys?
It's unbelievable. This season was not supposed to be the season that they made to the Super Bowl. Everyone was excited about Joe Burrow and their prospects for the future, but this wasn't supposed to happen, and it's honestly lifted up the city. The amount of Bengals gear that you see, the bars, the restaurants around game time every Sunday, it's been incredible.
Are you guys near the stadium?
We're about 10, 15 minutes away.
All right, so what is it going to be like on Sunday at the bar at Streetside?
It's going to be pandemonium. We've sold a lot of tickets for pre-seating, and then we're constantly getting messages about where people can sit, if there's standing room available, what the deal is. It's going to be crazy everywhere.
Well, it will be, and Cincinnati deserves it. It's interesting. There's a Midwest sensibility that the Bengals sort of are picking up on to give back in this way and to go hand out game balls to the local bars where this happens. I really appreciate your time, Garrett. It was good to see you. Thank you. And we'll be thinking about you guys on Sunday, and if they win on Monday morning for sure.
Yep. Thank you very much. Hoo day.
All right, I like it. We'll see you soon. All right, tonight, undercover sting operation on Dan Abrams. The officers who took down child predators are with Dan at the top of the hour. Welcome back. You shouldn't be seeing this video right now. It's of an $80 million F-35 jet that crashed a few weeks ago. I say you shouldn't be watching because the video could give our enemies, the Chinese, all sorts of information. It's the latest leak about the crash that happened last month as a U.S. aircraft carrier went through the South China Sea. This is the most damning video. You shouldn't know about that crash either in an ideal world. News of it tipped off the Chinese that America's most advanced technology is sitting at the bottom of the South China Sea, quite literally in China's backyard. So let's review what happened. One of America's most prized military assets crashed. Bad thing number one. News of the crash and that first video leaked out almost immediately, and then the Navy confirmed the crash. Dumb thing number one. Let's combine bad and dumb to find out what happened over the weekend. Someone with access to the highly sensitive video taken by the carrier's landing system put it on the internet. Other than giving the Chinese a map with a big red X and telling them good luck, it would be hard to know what the U.S. Navy could have done more to help the enemy. For a while, Navy ships kept running into each other and other ships. Both the USS Fitzgerald and John McCain ran into other ships, killing 17 sailors. That was back in 2007. There were some deep flaws in the Navy's ability to project force. We're looking into this, and there's some serious questions about what the Navy needs to do to protect America's sailors, but also our most valuable secrets. We're working on that for tomorrow. Dan Abrams is next. Don't forget to check in on social media at Leland Bennett.